Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, verse number 18. Varanendram puraskritya brahmanai sasumangalai sankyaturya ninadena brahmagoshena chadritaha pratyujamu ratarista pranayagata sadvasaha. They hastened toward the Lord on chariots with brahmanas bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded, and Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So now we're learning how to welcome the Lord. It's a pretty complicated process, full of love and affection. Purport. The Vedic way of receiving a great personality creates an atmosphere of respect, which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. The auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above, including conch shells, flowers, incense, decorated elephants, and qualified brahmanas reciting verses from the Vedic literatures. Such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the received. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So here we see a lot of wonderful phrases and descriptive words. But one thing we want to focus on today is the atmosphere of respect. This is extremely important. Because wherever devotees go, this atmosphere of respect should be there. Whether it's for the homeless person in the street, whether it's for people of different religions, whether it's for a poor person or a rich person, etc. It should be always following or where the devotee is. So what does this mean, atmosphere of respect? Well, it depends on how we see things. Some people see things always negatively. And such people, in a sense, should be avoided because their negativity can become infectious. When I say avoid it, that doesn't mean you shun them, but you don't aspire to associate with them a lot, you know, because they're negative all the time. On the other hand, some people are always positive. That might not be a good thing either, because if they're positive about the stock market and sense gratification, that's not good. So, to find people that are always positive, hopeful, enthusiastic, inspired about Krishna consciousness, they're the ones that will help us realize what's called the atmosphere of respect. So, this is extremely important because when people feel as if they've been, mistreated, subject of criticism and bad words and innuendo. Innuendo is a good word. You know what that means? No. Innuendo means, oh, Paramananda, you look like some guy I know who's a thief. So, I'm implying what? Yeah, you see, that's an innuendo. You know, innuendo means it's a roundabout way of accusing someone of something. Yeah, it's not direct, right? So we should avoid innuendo. By the way, look that word up on the dictionary. So a devotee is described as shama, forgiving. And a shama, right? Yeah, shama. And a devotee is not fault-finding and free from envy. That means adroha. Droha means envy, and adroha means free from envy. So shama, forgiving, free from envy, and atimanita has no expectation of honor. Atimanita. And alolupvam, free of from greed. And mardavam, gentle. And hri, modest. So these are some qualities of a devotee. Also, a devotee is free from fault finding. Let me see where that word is. It's the 14th chapter. You have to find that word. Okay, so these are the qualities of a genuine devotee, and such a person has respects the presence of Krishna in the heart of every living entity. It can be from a little germ, a worm, an ant, right up to Lord Brahma. See? So when we become respectful and create that atmosphere of respect, it's because we have a certain vision. What is that vision? That vision is we're seeing a person's relationship with Krishna, and we're seeing the presence of Krishna in the heart of the living entity. Therefore, we offer respect to the presence of the Lord. Now, if we only see the body of the person and we see bodily differences and ethnic differences and racial differences and economic differences and education differences, then gradually the respect will go away, especially if we're puffed up. We think, oh, I know more than that person, or I have more money than that person, or that person is black and I'm white, or that person is white and I'm black. And, you know, like, then we can't really have an atmosphere of respect with such superficial ideas in our minds. Those ideas are called upadis. Upadis means they are false designations. This is a world of designation that we're living in. See, people designate in many different ways, or they're race baiting, as they say in English, race baiting. But one time I was on the street, walking down the street in Seattle. It was in Berkeley, California. One black man came up to me and said, can you give me a quarter? I said, no, I don't have any money. He said, are you prejudiced? Right away he was race baiting, right? He's black and I'm white. And I said, no, I'm not prejudiced. He said, then why don't you give me a quarter? I said, well, look, I had to work hard to make one quarter. So why don't you go to work also? He said, see, I know you're prejudiced now. I said, no, I'm not prejudiced. I'm just giving you some good advice. You know, I never borrow money from other people. I work. If I need money, I have to work. He said, you should go out and get a job. He said, I am working. I'm working on you. I said, no, you're not working on me. You're working on my money. If you were interested in me, you wouldn't be talking like this to me. All you want is the money. You don't care about me. He said, "Oh, man, I can't talk to you anymore, man. You don't make no sense." I said, "No, I make a lot of sense." You know, sense, C-E-N-T-S and S-E-N-S-E. I make both of them. And you should also. He said, "No, man, I ain't talking to you no more." You know. So, you see, this is the problem that, okay, someone would say, "Well, see, you're a hypocrite. You say you have to create the atmosphere of respect. Where was your respect for that man?" I said, "Well, I respected that man because I was giving him good advice, like a father gives a son. The father says, you want money, you have to work for it. And if you work honestly, and then you'll always be, you'll never be hungry. You just be an honest person." Would you agree with that? You work, right? You don't go around panhandling people, do you? No. So that's the whole point. You know, why can't other people work? He was strong enough to walk down the street. He was strong enough to, I mean, obviously he was somewhat eloquent, you know. He said, "You prejudiced, man." You know, I mean, and then he was arguing with me. He's not a stupid person. He's intelligent, right? So why can't he work? Well, you know, he could say, "Oh, because white man has exploited the black man, and I didn't get the good education." Like that doesn't mean anything. You have uneducated people that come to this country, and they end up, doing very well financially. I mean, my father was not educated at all. He could barely speak English, even though he was living here for so many years. You know, he came here with nothing. But yet, somehow or other, he eked out a living and supported his family. My mother had no education, very little education. And she worked hard her whole life, you know. And she was not a billionaire or a millionaire or a thousandaire, but she made a living. She worked her whole life. My father worked his whole life. And they were not even born in this country. They couldn't even speak good English, right? Huh? Okay. That's where I was looking first, 16.1.3. Yeah, yeah. 16.1.3. What is that, a Apaisinum?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, I missed it. That's the one I went to first. I missed it, okay. Aversion to fault finding. Yeah, thank you. So, these are the qualities that one needs to have in order to create that atmosphere of respect. And when there's an atmosphere of respect, it's like a magnet. People come there. They like to be treated with dignity, right? I remember one time in People's Park in Berkeley, California, I was distributing food, but I let somebody else distribute it. And I was doing something else, and then an argument started between a homeless person and the person who was serving prasadam. So I go over there and see what's going on. And the man, the homeless person, said, "I'm not going to accept food from this guy." And I said, "Why not?" I said, "He's because he doesn't respect me. He's treating me like I'm a piece of dirt, you know. The way he looks at me, the way he's talking to me." He said, I don't accept food from people like that. So he had, you know, he had some dignity, right? He wanted to be treated with respect. He didn't want to be looked down on. So you see, that atmosphere of respect is something that people are, let's say, seeking and hoping. Like at our food truck, I think it was Daniel. Was it you, Daniel? You're talking to someone, and you ask them what their name was, and he started crying. Manoj, yeah, he started crying, and Manoj said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Did I say something wrong?" He said, "No, you're the first person that's asked me what my name is." That's it. So we don't realize, you know, how what dire condition people are in psychologically and physically you can see it, psychologically you can't see it. So Therefore, if there's always that atmosphere of respect, it cuts through all those, let's say, painful mental states that people are in, and calms them down a little bit, and then they can open up and interact in a positive way. Hari Bol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Okay, no questions. Yes?
That's probably a basic question, but I figured a lot of the devotees is not fault finding.
Yeah.
But in the lessons we learned from spiritual masters, that devotees, there's a lot of criticism in society and material life. So obviously, can you speak about that a little bit?
Okay. Well, let's see what we're talking about. If you see, like one time in our old temple here, which was a little house, one lady came, and afterwards she told somebody else who related it to us that she would never come back to the temple again. So I said, why did she say that? She said, because she came to the temple and she saw that the curtains on the windows were dirty, and that she has a house and all her curtains are clean, so she didn't want to come back because she thought that we were not really good people because of dirty curtains. And now, you know, these are things that people see. Isn't it normal that if you go to a temple, it should be very clean? But many times, devotees are meticulous about cleaning the altar. Sometimes cleaning the kitchen, so not all the time, but keeping the kitchen clean. But sometimes there's messy situations, you know, the shoe room and the bathroom and here and there in the classrooms, and devotees just walk by it every day as if it's normal. But someone who comes from a house that's very clean, they'll walk in immediately, they'll see, wait a minute, you know, this shoe room looks like crap. And, you know, that means the people here are crappy. You see? So, I've always said that every devotee, who's initiated at least, should have a sense of duty to keep the temple clean. Now, that doesn't mean you have to clean the whole temple, but if you see some part of it that's not clean, you should clean it. You shouldn't say, oh, that's not my service. That's nonsense. It is your service. It's our service, all of our service. You know, that we should, just like I was once speaking to this real estate agent who owned a big property. When we had this temple was being built, I met this one man in Redmond, and he owned a big complex. And as we were walking around, he was showing me different parts of his different areas that were for rent. And as we were walking on the pavement inside his complex, there was a paper on the ground. Now this guy's a millionaire. He told me he had like $25 million, right? He kneeled down and picked up that piece of paper and then crushed it, held it in his hand, and as we kept walking, there was a garbage can, he threw it in the garbage can. You see, that is civic, it's called, in a sense, of course, he owned that property, but it's called civic duty. A civic duty is you're walking down the street and you see something that's very dirty. Now, if you consider yourself a good citizen, and you feel you have a sense of duty as a civic duty as a citizen, you pick it up. You pick up that trash or whatever is defiling the natural beauty of the city. You see? Now this guy owned that property, so he had an obligation. He thought, he didn't say, "Well, I got $25 million in the bank. I don't stoop down and pick up a piece of paper." No, he did, because he felt as if he was duty-bound to do that, to keep his place clean. because, you know, you go to India and you'll see, you know, trash everywhere. Maybe not everywhere in India, but in many of the big cities, there's trash everywhere. People walking by it all the time. Is that right? Yeah. See, and why is that? You know, it's one thing people notice right away about, let's say you go to Mumbai or you go to, Calcutta or Chennai, you know, and then there's construction materials all over the place, you know, and then there's like these high-rise buildings and they're beautiful, but nearby there's trash all over the place. So people, you know, it's not like that here exactly, right? There are places like that here, but the bigger cities and well-managed cities, they clean things up. In India, they just leave the things, you know, big pipes and you know, construction material. So that civic duty, that sense that, you know, I'm part of this and I have a responsibility also to pick up paper, clean up trash. At least in the temple, and outside also. So these are just a few ideas, and it's all related to this atmosphere of respect. Yeah.
So I've got a couple of examples, like money. You remember Money Hart, and I was a kid, and his son went to visit his parents, and they were like English Catholics, they were standing tight. Everybody had a bunch of argument and row. Steve always brings up these heavy points in philosophy on how horrible and pretty the world is.
Well, I can show you what Prabhupada says. Don't preach negatively. Don't keep bringing up, negative subjects. When you preach, it should be uplifting. I can find that quote. Well, I mean, right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, was in the first chapter, the second chapter, it says, first chapter is, oh, yeah? One second. Oh, yeah. Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 10. Prayana alpapayusa sabha kalav asmin yuge jana manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hi upadrita. O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. How's that sound? Sounds a little bit negative, doesn't it? and it sounds like it's everybody. Yeah. So Prabhupada says, the people of this age are also very lazy, not only materially, but in the matter of self-realization. The human life is especially meant for self-realization. That is to say, man should come to know what he is, what the world is, and what the supreme truth is. Human life is a means by which the living entity can end all the miseries of hard struggle for life in material existence, by which he can return to Godhead, his eternal home. But due to a bad system of education, men have no desire for self-realization, even if they come to know about it. They, unfortunately, become victims of misguided teachers. In this age, men are victims not only of different political creeds and parties, but also of many different types of sense gratificatory diversions, such as cinemas, sports, gambling, clubs, mundane libraries, bad associations, smoking, drinking, cheating, pilfering, bickerings, and so on. Well, you know, someone said, what? I mean, I like going to the cinema, and I like going to the baseball game, and sometimes I go to the casino. What is he saying, you know? I'm not a bad person. Oh, okay, so who are you going to believe? So, these places are, and he's condemning the educational system also. Some people go, oh, no, I got a good education, you know. But it's a bad system because it teaches people not to try for self-realization, but try for sense gratification and money. So this is fault finding? No, there's a difference between fault finding and stating a fact. If you don't like someone, just fault finding is like this. There are two friends talking. And one friend tells the other friend, oh, you remember Johnny Smith? He said, yeah, I remember him. You know, he's become a Supreme Court judge in the United States. Said, well, they must have made a mistake. Well, you know how hard it is to become a Supreme Court judge in this country? It's very hard. There's a lot of vetting. There's a lot of... So, a person said, they must have made a mistake. So that means it's envious of that person. Say that's like unnecessary fault finding. But you know, if someone's a thief and you say he's the most honest person in the world because you want to be politically correct, that's a big mistake. Okay, so there's two ends to the two sides to the story. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.